Tactics of terrestrial intelligence. He has conducted briefings to President Clinton, first CIA director, key members of Congress, the UN leadership, and very senior Pentagon officials at the highest level of military, among others. Dr. Greer and CCTV, the organization he has founded, the CCTV research team and Dr. Greer have had remarkable close encounters of the fifth kind, experiences, and he has encountered UFOs. He is to speak about extraterrestrial contact, the evidence, and the implication. Eller på norsk, kontakt med romvåket, bevismaterialet og hva kontakten betyr. I am very pleased and honored to welcome Dr. Stephen Greer.
In fact, the resolution of this problem will determine whether we continue 50 years from now as a biosphere that can support intelligent life. That is how important this subject is. My uncle, who, I won't give his name out, I don't know if he wants me to, he's a public figure in a sense. He designed the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. So when I was a little boy, I was very interested in all things space. And so I began to look into all things space because my uncle's work on the Apollo project inspired me. And around that time, I saw something that I could not explain. It was a daytime disk. The year was probably early to mid-60s, where I grew up in the south of the United States in North Carolina. And I knew what I had seen. I was 8 or 9 years of age. First, my parents thought that I had seen nothing because if the authorities didn't say that these things were real, my parents were the type who took them at their word. But I knew what I had seen, regardless of what my parents thought and what the boys in the neighborhood with me had seen. And it was unmistakably a UFO, quote unquote. I also knew, however, that it was actually extraterrestrial because subsequent to this sighting, I had some experiences, like what Dr. Boylan discussed earlier, which convinced me that we were not alone. And that's why I'm standing here before you today. This issue cuts across almost every subject you want to entertain. Government, geopolitics, technology, science, philosophy, religion, economics, all of it. I'm going to try to encapsulate what I know, and I'm going to share with you, in half the time I had with President Clinton's CIA director, what I know to be true about this subject. So bear with me. We'll have to get our running shoes on to cover it. But I want to share with you, in addition to that information, my heartfelt sense that the time for the knowledge of this is coming very quickly. And it is coming because the Earth must have it. And the Earth must have it because the technologies behind these objects, which our covert programs in the United States and Great Britain have known about for over 50 years, will be the technology of the next millennium. We will not continue 100 years from now using Exxon fuel in our cars. We cannot, and we must not. The Earth cannot withstand the abuse for another 50 years. And so it is inevitable that the truth will be known, that the technologies will be available, that all poverty will be banished from the Earth through their advent, and we will advance as a peaceful civilization and one that quickly becomes interplanetary. This is our destiny. But we have dinosaurs running the show who don't want our future to be given to us. Now, that's the problem. And it is time for... Am I hooked in the ear I can walk away?
Yes.
Good. It is time that we claim our future back to us. In America, the great leader of democracy, my family, my mother's family, helped found the United States in 1776. No offense to my British friends, but they were in the Revolutionary War. And we've often sat around and talked about, do we still have a democracy? What has happened to democracy? Well, it's gone the way that President Eisenhower warned us in January of 1961 when he stated, beware the military-industrial complex because it will escape the checks and balances required for in a democracy and be as great a source of threat as it is of good. This was stated 40 years ago now. And in fact, he stated this because the President of the United States, a 5-star general, a World War II hero, a conservative Republican, was warning us of the excesses which he had encountered. How do I know this? Because I am working with people who worked with President Eisenhower in a senior capacity when he was president in the late 50s up into 61. And they have told me that President Eisenhower knew of the subject. He has seen the extraterrestrial bodies and materiel, but that the projects running those programs were out of his control. And he was furious, and he was sad, and he died a very unhappy man. This is true of our current president. I will speak only about what I know directly, because I am the person, the only person that you will ever hear speak publicly, who has personally briefed the senior staff of the President of the United States, the United Nations, and members of Congress on the subject. And I know what they know, and I know what they do not know. The good news is that they have been willing to listen. The bad news is that there has been a virtual and silent coup d'etat that has decapitated the leadership of your country and my country and other countries around the world on this issue. To get your mind around this subject, you're going to have to understand what is being kept secret. You're also going to have to understand how it's being kept secret. But most importantly, you must understand why. Why would we go to this kind of effort to keep something secret if all it is about people from outer space who are here to help us and to understand us? They are here to help us and to understand us. There is not a scintilla of evidence, notwithstanding all the fear-mongering in the media, and I might add the UFO subculture, that these life forms are in any way hostile. However, I think they are very concerned about our hostility, as well they should. We are the species, without any question we can prove, that have exterminated 200 or 300 million of our own in this century alone. We are the species that have for decades had a policy of mutually assured destruction, where if one nuclear weapon is launched, all of them are launched, and only we have a glowing bit of rubble left on the planet. We are the species that continues to use space primarily, even at NASA, as a military asset rather than to expand human frontiers of knowledge. They have good reason to be worried about us. I'm not so worried about the extraterrestrials. Come to my emergency department any Saturday night. In America, everyone has guns. And you'll see that we have... Don't worry your head about the ETs. I'd be more concerned about Homo sapiens. Now, with that said, we have to understand what the evidence is. And I don't need for you to take my word for this. I have this book I've just published. It's called Extraterrestrial Contact, The Evidence and Implications. It's about 550 pages. And it has the core of the best evidence in it that you'll ever need to read. It has the best government documents, top secret witness information, case evidence, and what have you. That's the easy part. You can read that if you can read in, you know, a few hours, and you will know what you need to know about that subject. But I think what is more difficult to get your mind around are the implications of the subject and why it's been kept secret. This is not something that is new, by the way. I'd like to share with you a few quotes, so you don't take my word for this, because I'm just a country doctor, originally from North Carolina, that got involved in this stuff by a series of events in my life. But listen to what Dr. Herman Oberth, Professor Oberth was the rocket expert, who was really the founding father of the space age, said, "It is my thesis that flying saucers are real and that they are ships from another solar system. I think that they possibly are manned by intelligent observers who are members of a race that may have been investigating our Earth for centuries. I think that they possibly have been sent out to conduct systematic, long-range investigations, first of men, animals, vegetation, and more recently of our atomic centers, armament, and centers of armament production." This is from page 110 of my book. No crackpot tea. Jimmy Carter stated in 1976, quote, if I become president, I'll make every piece of information this country has about UFO sightings available to the public and the scientists. I am convinced that UFOs exist because I have seen one. And I also have his reporting form that he submitted about his sighting. General Nathan D. Eich also commented that President Carter, if you bring this subject up to him today, his eyes well up in tears and he turns away from you. He was recently asked in an interview, it was on C-SPAN, what about the UFO issue? He says, well, I never could find out much about it. I guess I didn't have a high enough security clearance. President of the United States. A friend of mine who knows the Carter family and is a professor at Emory University told me that in a conversation with the former President Carter, that when he asked him about this subject, he was told that President Carter was visited shortly after he took office, and a man in a suit, intelligence, came to him and said, sir, if you would like to finish your first term in office, you will keep your mouth shut about the UFOs. I have every reason to believe that is true. Here is what General Nathan Twining said, who later also was head of the CIA. A, the phenomenon reported is something real and not visionary or fictitious. B, there are objects probably approximating the soft shape of a disc of such appreciable size as to appear to be as large as a man-made aircraft or larger. And then he said that the reported operating characteristics, such as extreme rates of climb, maneuverability, particularly in roll, and action, which must be considered the base of when sighted or contacted by aircraft and radar wind, will lead to the possibility that some of the objects are controlled either manually, automatic, or remotely. Now, this is not swamp gas that this general is talking about. General Walter Bedell Smith, first CIA director, one of the first, stated in a letter that was published in the Congressional Record and in the New York Times in 1960, 40 years ago. This is a former CIA director and general. Quote, the CIA has reviewed the current situation concerning unidentified flying objects, which have created extensive speculation in the press and have been the subject of concern to government organizations. Since 1947, approximately 2,000 official reports of sightings have been received. It is my view that this situation has possible implications for our national security, which transcend, listen very carefully, which transcend the interests of a single service. A broader coordinated effort should be initiated to develop a firm understanding of the phenomenon. The most important quote that I want to share with you, perhaps, is from Admiral Roscoe Hillenkoetter, Navy Admiral. Navy intelligence has always been key to this subject and key to the research and secrecy around it. He was the actual first CIA director. The other one was second, Smith. And what he wrote after he left the agency, about 10 years after he left the CIA, he wrote this. It is time for the truth to be brought out. Behind the scenes, high-ranking Air Force officers are soberly concerned about the UFOs, but through official secrecy and ridicule, many citizens are led to believe the unknown flying objects are nonsense. I urge immediate congressional action to reduce the dangers arising from secrecy about the UFOs. Not that the UFOs were dangerous, the dangers of the secrecy. This was written in 1960. President Eisenhower in 61 also warned us. We have done nothing to fix the problem. We must do better. I will not bore you with reading. I have a whole chapter of these kind of quotes in this book from people that range from Apollo astronauts to heads of state. Take it, anyone you want to brief. This book has everything in it that they need to know. I don't care if it's the president of your country. The issue, more importantly, is why and how. I had the unenviable task of being the first person to brief the CIA director on the president's staff for President Clinton. Now, here I am. I'm just a country doctor from North Carolina, and I'm sitting in my house, and I get a FedEx from a member of my team who is friends with the CIA director, and it says, Admiral Woolsey wants you to brief him about this subject. He has made inquiries and can get no answers. The CIA director, not a former one, a current one, has made inquiries and can get no answers to his questions. And you are going to be the first person to brief these folks on this problem. And I thought it was a joke. Well, actually, first I thought it was a prevarication. Polite way of saying a lie. And I thought that, well, certainly this guy had to know. Well, I fly into Washington with my wife. The cover story for this meeting was a dinner party at the home of the head of the Arlington Institute, which is a national security think tank in the D.C. area, very well connected national security think tank. And he was hosting us for dinner. And the CIA director also came with his wife. So the cover story was that it was a dinner party in D.C. amongst some people. This is the way it's done in Washington. Anything sensitive doesn't happen at the White House or the CIA. It happens in Georgetown at a dinner party. Now, what's interesting is that the meeting, you have to understand, it's a cabinet-level person. His wife, it turned out, I didn't know this, is head of the National Academy of Sciences. Chief Operating Officer. So she arrives first, and then later, the CIA director comes in a limousine with Secret Service sack wagons with Uzis or whatever they have. And he comes in, and my naivete, I thought they'd go away. But of course, they sat out front the whole time. I'm sure listening to every word being said at this dinner party. And we sat there, and we had about a 3-4 minute exchange of pleasantries. And then the CIA director said, let's get right down to it. I opened up a huge briefcase I had with government documents, thousands of pages of government documents, hundreds of photographs, top secret witness testimony from generals, from lieutenant generals, from top people. And we started going through this. About 10 minutes later, he said, okay, I know these things are real. He had seen one, but at the same time I did. He was older, and he was in New Hampshire, and in broad daylight, saw one of these discs moving across the landscape. So he didn't need to be convinced that the UFOs were real. The other 2.5 hours of the meeting, this was almost 3 hours with the sitting CIA director, the other 2.5 hours was talking about how the hell he could not know about it. Who did know about it? Why was it being kept secret? What are the implications when this information is shared with the world? What will happen to geopolitics? What will happen in the third world? What will happen to corporate America? What will happen to the Dow Jones Industrial Average? What will happen to things that people really care about? How the money hoarders in America sell their soul for a dollar. Now, so the big issue became very quickly, you know, what is really going on here? That's what we spent 2.5 hours discussing, and that's what I want to share with you. Now, the first thing that you have to do, if you're going to go talk to someone in your government, they're going to say, well, if any of this would be true, I would know about it. Because I'm the Minister of Defense, or I'm the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Not true. What you have to understand is that there are two governments. There's the acknowledged government that people elect and who get up in front of people. There's the unacknowledged government. which are covert, ultra-top secret projects. I know because I've been introduced to a great many of them. And I can tell you that the way those operate is like this. Let's say that this lady right here is General Harris, and I'm a colonel. And General Harris is someone who is over the entire Air Force. He's a four-star. I'm a colonel under her command, but I'm in one of these unacknowledged super secret projects. They don't exist legally on the books. There's no paper trail for them. There is absolutely, well, not that's acknowledged by Congress or the President. And I get wind of a secret project that she's in, but that she hears about that I'm in. She is not in that project. She is not accessed into it. The way it works, this is the proper term, is an unacknowledged special access project, USAP, USAP. An unacknowledged special access project works like this. If she gets wind of it by the rumor mill, she comes to me. I know everything about the project. I'm running the project. And she says, Colonel, what do you know about Project Zeta? I am to turn to her and say, General, I know of no such project. No such project exists. If she prevails, I just maintain completely that no such project is possible. If I break that rule, there's a bullet with my name on it, and I will be terminated. Not X-Files. This is how it really works. I know. I know too well. Now, the problem then becomes, what happens to the rule of law? If this is how this is occurring, what does this say about constitutional or democratic or parliamentary type of government? It means that they have been neutralized on this issue. Because when the President of the United States, after we had provided material to his science advisor, Dr. Jack Gibbons, to him personally, to his senior national security advisor, Tony Lake, he wanted to know what the hell was really going on. He asked his good friend and third in command at the Justice Department of the United States government, Mr. Hubble, to look into this subject. And Mr. Hubble called NORAD, North American Air Defense Command. He called the Air Force, the Pentagon. They all said, we closed Project Blue Book in 1969. We don't know anything about this subject. And Webster Hubble wrote in his book, Friends in High Places, and I quote, we were not happy with the answers we were getting. A polite way of saying they knew they were being lied to. Now, this is how the game is played. A man that I've worked with was on Ronald Reagan's National Security Council staff, and he told me that we didn't want the old man to know about something, how he called it. We lied to him. I said to the President of the United States, have you ever heard of the Constitution? He says, oh, we don't pay attention to that anymore. Now, okay, inside the Beltway in Washington, that's the way it works. And it's the way it works most everywhere in the world. This is not to say that there are no people in government with knowledge of this subject. There are, but they are very undercover, and they do not talk about it openly. To add to this, you have to understand, one of the chapters or the appendices in here is something that I put in at the request. It's actually the result of meeting with a senior member of Congress, Congressman Christopher Cox of California, a very powerful Republican. You heard about the Cox report that talked about the Chinese espionage at Los Alamos. He was the guy who was head of that committee. Well, before he became involved with that, I briefed him on this subject, and he asked me, he said, Dr. Greer, who the hell knows about this? And I said, well, you're not going to like my answer. He says, well, just tell me. Now, see, I'm an emergency doctor, so I'm very direct and very blunt. So, you know, what it is, the way it is, just boom, there it is. I said, well, listen, it's not the people who are supposed to know about it, for the most part. I said, but I would be looking in your backyard here in California at some aerospace firms. He says, what are you talking about? I said, well, there are super secret projects at Lockheed Martin and Northrop and E-Systems and SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation in La Jolla, California, that deal very directly with this subject. And I said, what you need to know is that there is a super secret component of the government which takes approximately $80 billion a year just from the U.S. alone, moves them into super secret black projects. There's no accounting for it. That then gets handed off to the corporations. And this is how it's done. And the corporations are the ones who do all the research and development, reconnaissance, and what have you, for the most part. They're the ones who manage the technology. They're the ones who do all the deep research. These include Bell Labs, Lucent Technologies, E-Systems, Raytheon. So this list is in the book. Now, this is why this book, I founded a corporation to publish this book. And the reason I did is that when HarperCollins and other people looked at what was going to be in it, they went, oh, this is a complete nightmare. We're not going to touch this. It's in here. You want to read it? You want to know which agencies? You want to know where the plants are at China Lake and the name of the facility? It's in the book. Read it. It's there. It's out there. Now, what I said to this congressman is that, my God, you have to understand that this is a very sensitive issue and how it's been kept secret. He says, well, God, he says, I understand secret projects. He says, but this is over the top. I said, yes, sir, it is. I said, let me share with you what the chief counsel for the Senate Appropriations Committee told me. I was sitting in the chamber of the dome of the Capitol in Washington, in the chamber where the Senate Appropriations Committee, where this is the committee that writes the $1.9 trillion check for the U.S. government every year. And the chief counsel for that, who has top secret clearance and subpoena power, which means they can hit people with a subpoena to get any information he wants, was asked by the chairman of the committee to look into this issue. I met with him and he said, Dr. Greer, you're dealing with the varsity team of all super secret projects. He said, I have a subpoena power and I have a top secret clearance. I know these projects exist, but I could not pierce the corporate veil or the veil within the Pentagon to get to the meat of what was going on. And I asked him, this is 1994, January, 6 years ago, and I asked him, I said, Mr. D'Amato, how much money is going into this kind of stuff? He said, conservatively, $40 to $100 billion a year. That's a lot of money. Black budget. No review by the Congress, no review by the President. Same thing in Great Britain. Now, in my journeys, you know, I say this is the journeys of this doctor, itinerant, whatever, going through the world. I met with the head of the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain, former head, Lord Hill Morton. I met with the head of the United Nations and the Boutros Ghali family. I met with the, you know, people who were on the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States. And almost all of them are in the blind about this because the subject has been, to use a good Reagan-era term, privatized. The way you privatize something is that the government money become a pass-through to the corporate world that really does the action. You want security at China Lakes? Who does it? Whack and cut. Not military police, but it's outsourced to a private corporation. They provide security. The way it works. Now, there's the architecture of the secrecy. Can I prove it? Yes. How? I've got government documents. Some of them handed off to me. One of them in here is one that was given to me by a National Security Agency official, and I was told by an FBI man that I could go to prison for having it. I said, well, really? I'll make 1,000 copies of it. And that was in this book. I said, come put the bracelets on. Come on. Come on, you want to dance? I'll get on the damn dance floor with you because I am not going to be silent on this. You want to take me to jail? I'll be on Larry King and on CNN the next day. Now that's my attitude. Okay, but you know, the hell with this. I'm fed up with the secrecy. They never arrested me, and it's in the book. And it's been authenticated by the best document authenticator in the world, who sat at the right hand of General Odom, the head of the National Security Agency for years, who has authenticated these documents, every document in this book, and there's just a basket, there's 60 or 80 of them. By the way, I only brought a few of these books. They're downstairs. I think I have about 50 of them here. Now, what happened with this process was that we quickly learned that to make any difference on this, we would need to have either a presidential commission to get this information out, a congressional hearing, which is what this videotape was made for. It didn't have the music on it. That was an audio tape running over it. And or a massive public disclosure, which we can't afford to do. It costs $3 to $5 million to put on a global documentary high class thing that didn't look like something from the X-Files, I mean, or something from a UFO documentary. There are no UFO documentaries out there that have done this properly. And what would you have to have in it? What you'd have to have in it is the best audio, video, photographic, material evidence. Do we have hard material evidence? Yes. Materiel, extraterrestrial objects, people within my team. Well, the thing that's going to carry the day, because everyone, if you pulled out a dead ET body or live ET, they say Steven Spielberg was working overtime, or George Lucas at Industrial Light and Magic did this, or that it was a hoax. But if you have several dozen colonels, generals, aerospace engineers, technicians at Sandia National Laboratories, people from Grumman Aerospace, subcontractors for Lockheed Martin, get up in front of Congress or get up in front of the public or at the UN and say, here are the projects I worked on, and here are my bona fides, rank, serial number, the whole nine yards, it'll be the end of the secrecy. We have that ability. I've had that ability for 5 years. No one has given us an opportunity to do it. There are people with zillions of dollars in the UFO field. They will not fund this disclosure. They're too busy doing nonsense. Now, the problem is, I'm not being subtle. The truth of this is that we have had the ability to get this out for some time. In 1997, I set up briefings for the U.S. Congress. We had 30 congressional offices that came. Chairmen of committees were there. Let me give you a name, which I did not share when I was here last time because it was too sensitive. Congressman Dan Burton, chairman of the powerful House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, was there. He told us when he left, I want everything you have on this subject. Guess what? He got scared off. His chief of staff started having his phone tapped, started being followed, started having electronic surveillance, and he said to us, this is too hot of a potato for me and it's not safe. Go shop it somewhere else. I met with Senator Richard Bryan, a senior member of the Senate Intelligence Committee for the United States. Very powerful senator from Nevada. His jurisdiction is Nellis Air Force Base. Hello, Area 51. He said, you know, I've been on the Senate Intelligence Committee. This has never, ever, ever been briefed to us. And I have no reason to believe it's real. So I pulled out all the stuff. And all the top secret witnesses, names with transcripts, put it in the video. We had videotapes of them. He went, well, I have no reason now to doubt this is real. He said, what the hell is going on here? I said, well, sir, this is called a secret government within the government. And you guys don't have access to it. He says, well, how do we do that? He says, who have you talked to about this? I said, well, CIA Director Woolsey, you know, Admiral so-and-so at the Joint Staff, the head of the intelligence for Joint Staff, blah, blah, blah. He says, well, hell, if they don't know, how am I going to do anything? I'm just a little senator from Nevada. I said, baloney, you took an oath, uphold the Constitution, and you can hold a hearing. And if you hold a hearing that's open, I've done closed meetings all I want to. That's why I'm here. You hold a hearing that's open, and I'll have 200 top secret witnesses who will testify. It'll be the end of the world as we know it, as the song goes. And he went, why don't you go talk to the Senate Armed Services Committee? You know, I think so-and-so would be a better person to do this for you. Pass the hot potato. Take the hot potato and pass it down the line. He didn't want to touch it. A friend of the President of the United States came to my home after I provided materials for his senior staff and said this to me. This is an FOB, friend of Bill, we call him FOB. Not an SOB, but some are, but, but an FOB. And he was a guy that is a very senior political figure who helped get President Clinton elected in 1992. And what I said, what he said to me, he stayed at my home overnight, and he said, "Steve, we're afraid that if the president does what you recommended to him and what you have recommended in your action plan to the CIA director, that he'll end up like Jack Kennedy." And I thought this guy kind of was a joker and got, you know, really quite a character. And I thought he was joking. I said, "Oh, how very funny." He says, "No, we're serious." I said, "You're telling me that the president is concerned for his safety if he bites this off and does the right thing?" He says, "Yes. We're quite convinced he'll end up dead." I said, "And this is a very, very serious problem." At that point, what we decided to try to do is to work it through the Congress, through the UN, and what have you. We're still trying to find someone with the courage to do the right thing for you and me and for the world. We're still looking. In the meantime, if you get on our website, www.cfepi.org, because we're a nonprofit, you will see the information and a videotape of what we plan to do to disclose this on a very, very serious level. And if you know people who would like to be part of that, who could help fund it, let me know. It's just a matter of providing the funding at this point. We have everything else in place. We have the PR firms in place. We have everything. I have the National Press Club offered and promised to us to use if we do this. We don't have the funding to do it. If I spent more time in the emergency room instead of doing this stuff, maybe I'd fund it myself. Anyway, that's the situation we're in. But to understand the how of secrecy, you've got to begin to understand why. Because you cannot go to an admiral, as I do frequently. I'm getting ready to go back to the Pentagon to brief a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, someone who is likely to be the next chairman. That's the only hint I'll give you, because it hasn't happened yet. But I have been briefing these kinds of people now for 5 or 6 years. You've got to understand why. I mean, this is the thing that most mainstream intellectuals and academics and media people and politicians don't understand. They go, "Look, you know, this sounds like a conspiracy theory." I said, "It is a conspiracy, but there are conspiracies in the world. You ever heard of the mafia?" But they have to figure out why. Why? I said, it's not because the world will fall apart, because people learn that we're not alone in it, that there are people from other star systems. That's not the reason. In the early days, there was some concern, but in the year of 2000, no, this is not a concern. The concern is this: how are you going from one star system to Earth in a person's lifetime? What technologies are being hidden? Follow the common sense rule. What's behind the phenomenon that people would want to keep secret? It's all about money and power and greed and control. Look, folks, if the world knew what I know today, there would be the collapse of many national economies when the oil went down the tube. We don't need oil. We haven't needed oil since the 1950s. By 1951, we had successfully reverse-engineered extraterrestrial propulsion and energy systems, but in addition to that, had successfully built operational systems using those same technologies. before I was born. I was born in 1955. And what we find when we look at this carefully is that the sort of coup d'etat, if you will, that took place very quietly within the military and industrial sectors and that decapitated the leadership, the president, and these other people from controlling these issues was done because they were trying to maintain the status quo of the world order. As I said to CIA Director Woolsey, these things are not traveling through interstellar space using Exxon Jet A fuel or a solid rocket booster, nor are they communicating through interstellar space using AT&T microwave systems. It's a whole new paradigm. It's a new physics. It's a new type of energy. And this is real. It is not science fiction. And that is why it's been kept secret. Because if the truth about that became known, it would cause massive changes in the way the world operates. Who's in the catbird seat? Who's calling the shots? But don't be too simplistic. It's not just about money. It's about the power that money represents. Because, you know, I know several billionaires. These people aren't worried about money. My God, you can't spend it fast enough. You know, in America now, every other person's a multi-hundred millionaire from the internet and everything else. There's so many multi-hundred millionaires you can't even know who they are by the money. But it's not just conventional power. It's geopolitical power. And let me explain this to you in a very easy way. I'm on the board of directors, and I'll tell you, in the last couple weeks I've become CEO of an energy company that has one of these devices. Prototype. Not from the ETs, but from an engineer, PhD electrical engineer, who came across an idea and spent 15 years building it. You put in one unit of energy, 10 units of energy come out. Impossible? No, this is accessing the quantum vacuum field, a multipotent state of energy from which all matter and energy is fluxing in the universe. It's everywhere. Means you don't need internal combustion engine. Also means you don't need oil or gas or coal or nuclear power. Poof! I just said goodbye to $5 trillion part of the world economy. Adios, amigos. Don't let the door hit you in the ass. All right? Now, the problem with that is that there are a lot of vested interests here, powerful interests, that make the U.S. government look like nada, look like nothing. Zip. Because the money and the power behind these interests exceed that of the total government of the United States. A senior White House correspondent who is one of the most respected reporters in the world, who is the dean of the White House press corps. She's a very elderly woman now named Sarah McClendon. I have been working with her, and I was meeting with her a few months ago, and I think it was in March actually, about 10 months ago. And she has been bugging the president about this issue, trying to see. She says, why don't you have Dr. Greer, you take his advice to get this stuff out to the world. It could benefit so much of the world. And he bent over to her. Now, this is true. This is from her to me directly, firsthand. The president bent over to little Sarah McClendon, who's 88 years old, and said, Sarah, there's a secret government within the government, and I have no control over it. I have no control over it. Take it to the bank. It's the truth. Now, the problem is, this has been developed because transnational corporate and institutional interest in keeping the status quo going exceeds the interest of any given country, including the United States and its president. What I just said is a mouthful. But let me explain. Let's say this little device that would sit on this table over here would put out enough energy, no transmission lines to it, no power plants, no oil, no coal, no radiation. That's what it is. That's, by the way, how our UFO travels. In a more sophisticated way. What we have is version 1.0. They have version 10,000. It doesn't matter. It still accesses this field of energy. When that happens, You can have one of those in every village in the Amazon, or in Africa, or in India. They won't cut down the rainforest to make charcoal to cook their meals. They won't need to. We won't have any global warming. We will not have air pollution. Every manufacturing process can scrub to zero the amount of effluent it puts into the air and into the water. Why? Because there will be endless amounts of energy to scrub it to zero without any expense related to the energy itself, just the machine that makes it. Think about it. The Earth would become a paradise, but would also be very high-tech. That's how other extraterrestrial civilizations are. That's what they look like, physically. But, here's the bad news. And a lot of this is racist, I think. They don't want these savages in the third world to have the same amount of power they have. Look for a minute. Where do you get your power in the world? Some from your population. All of Europe and America is 600 million people. The world has 6 billion. We're only 10% of the whole world's population, all of Europe and America. 1 in 10. That's all we are. But we virtually dominate the whole world geopolitically and in every other way. If these other countries and peoples, where 90% of the world resides, begin to have the economic output, the technological prowess that we have, we're going to have to put the seat for them at the geopolitical table that isn't just window dressing like the United Nations is. We'll have to really share in a consultative way power in the world with the rest of the world. These people don't want that to happen. They are holding on to the old way desperately. And they are the most powerful operation in the world. Some of their interests have been understandable. Because let me tell you, if the corporation that I have just become CEO of successfully gets this prototype tested by universities, this is what we're going to be doing, tested by the government, and they issue reports that it performs the way we think it will, it's the end of the world as we know it. You know, so, let me tell you, it will collapse all of the economies dependent on oil. Norway is dependent on oil. Now, you say, well, you've got to be crazy to even take on such a task. Well, maybe I am. But what are you going to do? You're going to wait, the whole environment's going to collapse and it's going to be the end of life on Earth. What are you going to choose? The right choice is to do this. It should have been done in 1950 when the world was still being rebuilt in the Marshall Plan after the ruin of World War II. It wasn't because the whole project was hijacked by a bunch of fascists, in my opinion, who have had their primary interest domination of the world's economy and social culture. It's an experiment that's failed. Because the Earth's environment now is speaking to us. The polar ice caps are melting. Dr. Boylan shared with you the effects of both of them going in and killing the phytoplankton. There are massive ecological catastrophes on the near horizon. Not 1,000 years or 100 years, but 20 to 50 years away. So we don't have time for this game anymore. But if this information comes out, what will happen to the price of a barrel of oil? From $18 a barrel to $2 or $3. You can't even pull it out of the North Sea for $2 or $3 a barrel. It'll only be useful for synthetics, lubrication, lubricants, and plastics and things of this sort, which is a tiny fraction of the amount used, because most of it is burned up into the atmosphere in your power plants and in your cars and in your homes. You won't need them anymore, but you'll have one of these devices in your vehicle, and it runs your car. You'll have one of these devices at your home, and it provides all your energy. By the way, no utility bills. Just got rid of a $1 trillion business called public utilities. You don't need them. You haven't needed them. My friends, this is a big deal. This is, as my friends in Washington say, this is a huge big deal, because when you start talking about that kind of impact on the global order, you then set off every alarm bell in the national security. security, economic, and other areas where people want to maintain stability. And I understand the need for stability, but we frittered away 50 years when we could have transitioned into it, and now the ecosystem is groaning under the weight of 6 billion people wanting to drive cars like you drive, and wanting to have refrigerators like you have. We can't go on like this. Everyone knows we have to fix it. The good news is we know how to fix it. We have the technologies. These have all been figured out. Everything we need to create a sustainable, pollution-free, high-tech civilization we have today. But you, the people, are going to have to demand that we get it. You can't be passive like cows anymore. There is so much at stake here that if you just get a glimmer of what I shared with you, you will understand why the secrecy was enforced. But equally, why at this time it has to be ended. And that's why I've taken 10 years of my life, a couple million dollars of my own income and money, to pursue this and do this. It hasn't been very rewarding so far. A lot of suffering. But we've made a lot of changes. There are people who are now inside these covert programs that admire a great deal what we're saying, and the debate he's talking about, we instituted. Largely amped it up. That's within this MJ-12 group. And it is called chaos in that control group. Too bad. So sad. Hey, time to shake it up a little. Alright. Those are some of the issues that are at stake. But I want to now go into something that's even more empowering to you. You can help us get this done. Someone in here knows someone who can underwrite the expenses for doing this disclosure. Get them to us. Someone in here knows another top secret military person who needs to come forward at the right time. Someone in here knows the people who can help us build and protect from fascist interests these new technologies so they don't end up on a black shelf, never to reach you, the people. Talk to me if you can help us. But there's something else you can do. I'm going to change gears here briefly, and I'm going to tell you about something that is very empowering. The UFOs are out there all the time. They're not always materialized completely in the physical field. Many of you who have scientific backgrounds may not have understood fully what Dr. Boylan was talking about. But what he spoke is absolutely true about how these ETs can appear and manifest. But I want to tell you how. So I'm going to give you a little bit of the physics behind an object dematerializes, collapses in our time space, and reappears in another star system. Because I know how this is done. I'm just a country doctor. I don't know I'm not a mathematician, but I understand qualitatively and in terms of how it's actually done. Seen it done. Since the 50s, U.S. covert projects have had the ability to dematerialize and teleport an entire object through space. I have scientists that I'm working with who have been involved in this project. This is nothing new. It's just been suppressed because of the effects on the economy that I described earlier. But think about what a civilization from another star system might have in terms of their capabilities. When I was sitting at this meeting with the CIA director, he was sitting in front of me, and Dr. Woolsey, his wife, was sitting beside me. And leave it to a woman to ask a really good question that's abstract and spiritual. She turned to me and she said, Dr. Greer, how are these things communicating through interstellar distances? Now, this shows that she's smart, because if you are in a star system 1,000 light years from here, which is in our nearby galactic neighborhood, our galaxy is about 100,000 or 150,000 light years across, a light year is a measurement of distance. It's the distance a beam of light travels going 186,000 miles a second, about 300,000 kilometers a second per year. Every second, 300,000 kilometers year. That's one light year. Now let's say you're just from another star system, 1,000 light years from here. That's in our nearby neighborhood. At the speed of light, which is what a radio signal travels at, it will take 1,000 years for you to get the signal to the point, and another 1,000 years to get an answer. So let's say you're a UFO here on Earth, an ET craft, and you're wanting to talk to your home planet. You call them up and say, hello, this is Steve, you know, from Zeta Reticuli, I'm calling home, phone home. And then the other guys at the other end go, yes, fine, I'm glad you're doing well today. How's the weather at Oslo? That exchange just took 2,000 years, the time since the birth of Christ to now, to get that conversation. The speed of light is too slow. And that is not how these things are either flying, functioning, or communicating. They are modulating in a resonance field that is sub-electromagnetic and nonlinear. And I'll go into this in a moment. What that means is that their technologies go through the crossing point of light, but not in a way that is a incremental linear acceleration. It is a quantum phase transition, phase shift from one form to another. And guess what? When you get into that area of science, you get into what my friends at the CIA call the weird disk. Weird, weird, weirder, weirdest. I'm going to call it weird for a minute, and you're going to forgive me, but it's the truth. So when Dr. Woolsey asked me this question, I turned to her and I said, well, I almost lied. Because I thought I would lose all credibility with this person who is head of the National Academy of Sciences if I told the truth. But what I've learned to do is to always tell the truth, and if you ask me a question, I'll assume you're ready to hear the truth when we have our question and answer session later today. So I turned to her and I said, well, Dr. Woolsey, they're not using your granddad's Oldsmobile to get here, and they're not using electromagnetic communication systems as we understand it. They're using computerized arrays, technologies that interface with sub-electromagnetic energy, energy that is finer and faster, if you will, than electromagnetism as we currently define it. And that sphere of energy is identical with what we call thought form. Ouch. Now, it just fell out of the box of science, conventional Western science. And what I told to her is that you can have one of these devices, think to it, and it sets up a resonant field, non-locally, that doesn't go in a linear way through space, that then interacts with the other terminal in real time, bypassing the constraint of linear time space. Thoughts are things also. How weird do you want to get? If we had enough time, I'd take you really weird. But I'll tell you a story of a man who worked for Bell Labs back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. He's an elderly man now who's retired about 10 years ago. And he, back in the early 60s, was given an extraterrestrial communication device off of one of these crashes. He's one that testified and wrote to Congress about this. It was about the size of a large grapefruit, round and sort of corrugated, sort of irregularly surfaced. And it, when he received it, it began to say things to him mentally. As if a... Boy, now this guy's not schizophrenic. I know what schizophrenia is. As an ER doc, I commit people to insane asylums all the time. Who come in with a knife, you know, hearing voices. This was something that was very precise. And what it did was that it began to ask him to destroy the device because the general that had him do the research on it had, quote, evil intentions in his heart when he found out how these things would work. So he was in a moral crisis. He finally decided to accidentally, on purpose, overheat this thing, melt it, destroy it. And he did it in a very powerful chamber. The last thing that he heard from this thing was, thank you. Sounds like science fiction. It is not. It is not. Now what this means, when I said this to Dr. Woolsey, I was expecting her to laugh and call me every name in the book, which I have been called, of course, so on. And instead she turned to me and she said, I thought it had to be something like that. And I think in part because she was able to understand the quantum physics involved, but also understood that the nature of conscious, intelligent mind is something which is mysterious to those of us in the West, but to other cultures is not so mysterious. And here is how these systems work. All of you think that you are awake right now, those of you who I haven't put to sleep. No one yet. And all of you think that your consciousness is yours, because you have your body and your ego and your sense of self. In reality, as Erwin Schrödinger said, the father of modern quantum physics and particle wave theories, Dr. Schrödinger said, the total number of minds in the universe is one. There is one hyper-resonant field of awakeness and conscious intelligence, which is shimmering, shining, phasing through the entire cosmos. But its nature is that it cannot be divided. It is a unitive state that is always one, so that if you access it, you can immediately access any point in space-time, because it is omnipresent. Does this make sense? It is an omnipresent resonant field. And because of that, and because everything in the universe has a component of it which is intelligent and conscious, whether it's a photon, an atom, a galaxy, an ET, a plant, this stage, everything has associated with it some component of consciousness, awakeness, awareness, intelligence. And at the root of all matter, and at the root of all that there is the singularity of conscious awareness. And through that, now am I scientifically starting to describe God? Whatever you want. Put whatever label on it you will. There is a component that is conscious. Now, is this a theory? No, it has actually been proven by scientific studies in quantum physics, where they have found that even a photon can be altered, will alter, when you are shooting it towards an opening, and the person will then think to change the opening, and the photon changes directions to go to it, repeatedly, as if it was acting intelligently. Precognitively. This was reported in physics journals all over the world. It was reported in Newsweek magazine. And they called it, they were joking, it's a precognitive photon. Has the ability to act precognitively. That is true. The whole, you know, Dr. Mitchell and I have begun to talk about a holographic universe that is self-aware and non-local all the time. So every point in space and time is accessible instantly at any other point in space and time through the structures of reality, of the cosmology, which are increasingly conscious, self-aware, and eventually the pure consciousness itself, the state of samadhi. You go sit, you meditate, you have an experience of samadhi. Before I was a doctor, I was a meditation teacher, and I used to teach people the Vedas. So I used to be a, help people learn Sanskrit. Now, what you find is that this means that there is an immense amount of knowledge that is beyond our current material sciences, but which are still sciences, and there's still physics of it. It's just physics outside the box of linearity, and which crosses over into what has heretofore been dismissed as metaphysics. But hello, wouldn't a satellite cell telephone or video tape be something magical and supernatural and metaphysical to people 500 years ago? Let's be humble enough to recognize that we're just one step out of the jungle. One step just just emerging into awareness and science and knowledge. And so we are dealing with a civilization, multiple civilizations, at least dozens of them, which are capable of interstellar travel and interstellar communications. And this is why, on the Sea City expeditions, we have found ourselves able to utilize lasers, light, electromagnetic signals, and consciousness, group awareness, to remotely see in consciousness these objects in deep space, vector them into where we are located. And you know what? We've never had a weak expedition where they haven't shown up. Never. This is the reason why, and people say, how did you end up meeting with the head of Army Intelligence? They heard about what we were doing. And while we have been laughed at and ridiculed by the mainstream, and for you, especially by ufologists, oh, they hate this stuff. Oh, it's too weird. We want to kick the tires of the UFO. I said, kick what? Most of the time they're not materialized. Most of the time they're dematerialized in a spectrum of energy that is beyond physical as we understand it. That's how it works. So CFETI has utilized these things to begin to open up direct contact with these extraterrestrials. And you're all invited. We've had a training in England in July. You're welcome to come too. If we had enough people here, we'd come to Norway. We'll go to Hesselblatten, or Hesselblatten, I don't know what you say. I'm not good with languages. I'm terrible. I'm a terrible American. I'm horrible with languages. But we really have this ability, and I would love to share it with you. Can't do it in an hour and a half, but I can tell you it works, and it's fascinating. And that's why the CIA director was interested. Because they know we had vectored these things in, and they had landed with us. But how do you get through interstellar space with a big spacecraft? It's one thing to send a thought through two computerized terminals that can access thought stuff. So how do you get a big machine? Well, first of all, you know, in the cities, the siddhas in India, I've seen this done. If you're adept enough, you can have this and have it dematerialize. It just disappears and rematerializes over there, or in her lab, or wherever. Extraterrestrial scientists reproducibly and scientifically enable this to be done as follows. It's electronics. It's high-energy electronics. And what they, and believe me, the guys at E-Systems and Raytheon and EG&G know this stuff. They do it all the time. It's called interdimensional devices that are made in the good old U.S. of A. But the extraterrestrials had it first. And what's interesting is that they can put an energy field around this so that in one quantum movement, this material object, remaining in its same basic form, shifts into an energy form that is no longer solid matter, or even electromagnetic energy as we define it. Where has it gone? Between that point and the point where it rematerializes at another star system. Let me tell you this story so you understand it. One of my military guys is a guy who was at Las Vegas Air Force Base during an encounter back in the early 60s. He had a massive UFO encounter with radar and everything, and he's willing to testify openly about it and bring his colleagues with him. And he called me and he said, you know, I called you essentially to tell you this story and to offer to be one of your witnesses. But in reality, I'm hot, if you don't mind, I'll take this off. In reality, the, am I dressed? You never know when you take off your clothes if you're still in tech. And in reality, he really wanted to help share this story, which I'm going to share with you. And if you get an insight into this, you will understand interstellar transport. He told me that he, after many moments, he said, I'm going to be embarrassed because if I say these things, you're going to think I'm a crackpot. And I said, oh no, your secret is safe with me. I've been called every name in the book. Oh, 5 minutes. Okay, oh, quick. I said, look, just share with me what you know. I'm a very open-minded person. very skeptical person, but a very open-minded person. And he said, one time I was trying to study with some people to learn how to have an out-of-body experience. Anybody know what this is? Where the astral body, the body that continues after death, leaves the physical body and goes out. And he was studying with a certain tradition to learn how to do this on a regular basis. He had never done it. One day his teacher came and said, you're about to be able to have this experience. And that night he did his program or technique, I don't know what he was doing, and he left his body in what I call an uncontrolled launch. And he went out through the ceiling of his house and up into the atmosphere above the building, his house, and slammed into the side of an extraterrestrial spacecraft. And as he did so, he rocked it. It moved when his astral body hit it. He then popped into the interior of it, clumsily, and he saw the ETs at a console, and they looked over at him like, my God, why don't you watch what you're doing? And it was an interplanetary faux pas and awkward thing, but he became so embarrassed, he fell out of his body and into, out of the ship into his body. He said, now, I know this experience was real, even though most people would say it doesn't prove evidence. I said, oh, of course it's real. He said, you know that. I said, oh, I've been doing this since I was a child, leaving my body and flying around. I died when I was 17, so I learned a whole lot of things when I died and came back. Maybe that's why I'm an emergency doctor. I don't know. And so I said, look, this makes perfect sense to me. He said, but how did my astral body move this big spaceship? It wasn't like I bumped into another ghost or something where we would have the same density. I said, oh, where do you think extraterrestrial vehicles are between the spaces? That's where they have gone. They've gone into that dimension. They've gone into that energy field where they transition from a huge machine electronically, it is physics and it is scientific, into an energy field that closely approximates, choosing my words carefully here, closely approximates what the mystics call the astral energy field of the astral body. Absolutely true. Not the same. It's a little different because there's still an electronic connection. And this is why transport through 1,000 light years of space may actually take a couple of weeks instead of being instantly like the thought transmission through a machine. Because there is a coefficient of drag as these spacecraft adhere to the underbelly of the physical material cosmos. It's the best way for me to describe it. So it's not instant. But that's the energy they are in. And so you can have experiences with these ET craft in the lucid dream state, in forms of energy, as Dr. Boylan described, where they come into an area and you just see a sparkling light that then comes in and vanishes. Or you may have a whole enchilada there materialize with ETs in the flesh there interacting with you. It's all the same. It's a matter of shifting the energy resonantly somewhat across, to and fro and through the crossing point of light. About a third of my book is about this subject. What on the other side of the crossing point of light? Why is it that thousands of people have seen these UFOs, not said a word and had a thought, oh, I wish it would move to the right, and it goes, and then they think, oh, I wish it would come down, and it goes, now this is what we do. So we train people to enter into a non-local universal component of consciousness, remotely see these objects, interact with them, and show them our location here on the earth. And ever so often, they show up. And when they do, it's fantastic. It's wonderful. I'm running out of time. I'm just trying to open a window to these things. These are discussed in excruciating detail in my book, all of these different sciences and understanding. But what I would like to close with is this very essential point. You can form a group of people to go out there and establish preliminary, at least, contact with these life forms. I give you permission. You need an authority figure? I'll pretend I'm an authority figure. I give you permission to make open contact with these extraterrestrial life forms. So don't worry about the president or the military or your government. Do it. That's what we've been doing. When I first started it, I had a man in the military, head of Army Intelligence, pull me aside and said, just what do you think you're doing? Because we had had this massive sighting in Florida where there were 50 people on the beach, and there were four UFOs that we vectored in, called in, and it was on 5 videotapes. It was in the papers the next morning. He says, you're going to blow the lid off this thing. I said, that's the point. I said, we don't need your permission. He says, just how far do you intend to take this? And I said, to its ultimate conclusion. What are you going to do about it? This is the head of Army Intelligence. Now, he tried to persuade me to join his cover-up team in exchange for a huge amount of power. And I said, I don't want it, don't need it. People, you can take this to the ETs yourself. Don't wait for the government to say you need to because they are totally paralyzed. Just do it, as we say in America. I would also like to say that the future we are going to have is the future we are going to create. Our children deserve a better world than the world that we have today. They deserve a world without pollution. They deserve a world that is not being strained by corrupt interests and where our future is being hijacked to maintain the status quo of the power structure that exists in the world today. They deserve this. Let us give it to them. And I am confident that if all of us work together, we will create that good future, which is the destiny of humanity. Thank you very much.